It's been a wild party indeed. Part three. Right now, David Langeth, a longtime drummer for Kim Mitchell. And it's been a lot of fun to do this in three parts. We've had some great conversations from things that go right back to the early days when Dave started playing drums to Berklee College, playing with bands out in the East Coast, and of course, meeting Rick Emmett, playing with Rick Emmett, playing with Nelly Furtado, and of course now with Kim Mitchell, as I mentioned. You can check out the first two episodes, musiclifemagazine.net. Musiclifemagazine.net. It's the Industry 45 podcast show for Giant TV, giantfm.com. And let's get things going. It's our final episode here with Dave Langeth. It's part three, Industry 45 podcast show.
Welcome back to the podcast, and here's Shane Christopher Neal.
How long did you play with Nelly for?
For 7 years.
Okay, wow, that's a long time.
Yeah. All the TV, all the radio shows, some studio recording stuff, and then all of her tour, all the touring.
So that's where the Jay Leno, Letterman, Regis and Kelly, like all that stuff was with Nelly.
Yeah, all the American Canadian TV shows, all the award shows. All of the, like, everything from the American Music Awards to the Junos to the Latin Grammys to Top of the Pops, England Top of the Pops, Germany, France, Italy, and then playing stages and private performances and stuff from Kazakhstan to Russia to Chile, you name it, it was all over the map. India, yeah, all over.
Crazy. So,
yeah, that was, and the band was great, always had really, really amazing players in the band. I would never take anything away from that. And, I was going to jump back to this when I started talking about the Nelly thing. I was expected to in this, especially for TV shows, to play the songs as is on the record and to emulate exactly that. So I started triggering stuff, and I didn't want to have backing tracks playing. I wanted to do it all myself. Wow. And so I would try to have like hand claps on this and that, and I would play everything that was on that recording for real. And when it got to the live stage and they wanted me to open up, now they asked me to open up, and I had a hard time doing that because the patterns I was playing, there was no room. You couldn't physically do anything else, or you'd lose that, right? You lose the pattern.
Sure.
And I eventually did it for the first tour like that, and I would open up a couple fills. Finally, I'm like, you know what? Screw this. Put the track on, for God's sake. I'm like, I don't want to do all that. I want to play drums. I want to be a drummer and have room to express myself. So they would put like basic things like a hand clap or a specific sampled snare drum or an effect on a backing track for some songs, not all the tunes. And it would just allow me now to actually like play a groove the way I want to play a groove around that beat. Way more fun.
Sure.
And it's way more syncopated. It just sounded more full. It's like a reality I didn't want to give into, and you know what that came from? That came from my respect for people like Neil Peart and the band Rush and people, the bands and artists like that. They would do things in real time. They would sample sounds and trigger them live, but they would not put backing tracks.
Yeah. Well, that's a great lesson too.
Yeah. I came from that headspace, but in this kind of music, there's a point where you go, forget it. It's too much.
So let's go to Kim. So that gig, now, did you replace Chris Sutherland? I'm trying to think of, because he's had a lot of drummers, but I remember Chris was playing with him.
Chris played for a while. I'll just say the story that's out there, and I guess it's what Chris wrote. So I'll, you know, that's what I'll leave it at, and whatever, I'll respect, you know, whatever. I mean, he was playing the gig for many years. I think he was in it for 10 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was a long time.
Yeah, he was in it for a very, very long time, and he sounded great doing the gig. The guy was like a freaking rock, you know, playing those tunes. And he got busy doing a theater thing. He was doing Kinky Boots.
Okay. Yeah.
Kinky Boots ended up being huge. Like it took him right out of the gig. I mean, he was playing.
Well, it's got Cyndi Lauper, does it not?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Here's the funny thing. I'm friends with Sammy Marandino, Cyndi Lauper's drummer.
Yeah.
And Sammy was doing Kinky Boots with Cyndi in New York. And he put together, I think he did a lot of the arrangements in it and put together the bands and all that kind of stuff. He was definitely had something to do with the arranging. And he called me on the phone and told me that he already made the phone call that the Kinky Boots is coming to Toronto. And he told them that I'm the guy to do the gig. So I was expecting to receive the call to do Kinky Boots.
And that didn't happen.
It never happened. And then I find out Chris is on Kinky Boots. And
you got the Kim Mitchell gig. So there you go.
And I ended up on Kim's gig. And I didn't see that one coming either. You know, I had a buddy, Yurko, and phenomenal guitar player. He used to play with Nelly before I joined Nelly's band. He was on the first tour with her doing I'm Like a Bird, that whole Whoa Nelly stuff. And Yurko had been teching for Kim for all these years, and he's put my name in the hat many times. And I was playing with a band, a metal pop band, at the Rock Pile, and we were opening for Jakey Lee. And Kim came to see Jakey Lee, and he was with Yurko. And I remember this very funny moment where Kim asked Yurko, he's like, "Who's playing drums in the opening band?" And Yurko was like, "That's Dave Langeth. I told you about him. Like, for all these years, I've been telling you about him." So he's like, "Dave, come over here." And he brings me over to Kim. He's like, "Kim, Dave, Kim, there you met." And Kim just kind of grinned, and I was like, "Hi, Kim." not a weird moment there. And we just said hi, and that was it. And then a week later, it was like, "You know, do you think are you available for a gig?" And I guess Sutherland was doing something else. I don't know what it was. And then for whatever reason, I was being booked on the gig, and then suddenly Chris was doing the gig again. So I don't know.
So you played, and then he came back. Is that what you're saying?
No, I never did the gig. It never happened.
Oh, okay. I got it.
Yeah. Suddenly he was booked on the gig again, and I was not on it. And then another year went by again of nothing. And then, but in the meantime, for a couple of years, I had, after I got into Nelly's band, I had enough of R&B and, hip hop beats. And I said, "No more rock and roll for me. Here it comes again." Right.
Yeah.
And I put it out there, and I started playing in that metal band. And then I started doing a lot of shows, filling in, doing stuff with Honeymoon Suite.
That's how. Okay, now it's making sense because I saw some posts from what's his name. Oh my God, he has the record label out in Europe.
Yeah.
And he had some photos of you, and he was playing with you guys not that long ago. His name's Mike. Is it not?
Mike. Yeah, Mike K.
Yeah, right. So he played, this is not that long ago, and you're playing drums. I think this is in Toronto. This is like within the last like 8 months. I don't know what it was for, where it was, or maybe it was an old video. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Yep, that was like a one-off thing that happened. I was surprised that they needed a drummer and guitar player for that thing. And Mike has been producing and recording a new Honeymoon Suite record.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I did an interview too with Derry not that long ago. Right. We were talking about that too. Cool. Yeah, so.
Yeah. And Mike and I go way back where when I first moved to Toronto, Mike Krompas and myself, we started a band called 6 Foot Daisy. And that was the first regular cover gigging band I was in. And so we were involved. We were roommates for a while and, you know, all that. And, And then Mike ended up doing Nelly's gig with right before Yurko.
Wow, what a crazy, eh?
The turnover of guitar players in that band. Oh my God. So first to start was Mike, then Yurko came in, and then they were out, and then the new tour started for the new record, and that's when I came in. And that was the honeymoon suite stuff. And
so how long have you been with Kim? Yeah. How long have you been with Kim? Let's go back to that. So you've been there how long now?
I think this is the fourth year now.
Fourth year, okay.
It went by really quick. Wow. And
you play the gig well. Like, I mean, you know, you're a rock drummer. And I said this to you, and I was, you know, I wasn't kidding when I said it, that if anyone's going to play drums in Rush, it's got to be fucking you, because you just, you've got the chops, you've got the whole, the dynamics, everything. But, and I like Chris, but man, when you play with Kim, there's just something really special about it. And I grew up listening to Kim Mitchell. You know, I play mm-hmm. some of his songs, like the easier ones, you know, like Lager and Ale and stuff. you know what? I've always appreciated his music, and you deliver it just really, really well. So that's awesome.
Right. Yeah, one of the things that I realize and I respect, and Kim has told me before that he likes in my performing, with him, is how much I vibe with them. And sometimes it's harder than others, depending on the scenario. Maybe it was you're tired, you know, that's a hard one when you're tired and your focus isn't there. But, you know, the thing I learned from being in a band like Nelly Furtado, when you're playing Wembley Stadium for Prince Harry and Prince William, for Lady Diana's birthday party, you're, you know, in a stadium with thousands of people, your game is on. It doesn't matter what the scenario is. You're always game on.
Yeah.
And when the song starts, you have to settle immediately. You must find the pocket. You must find the groove. As soon as that song starts, I'm not feeling it yet. And then you're in the first chorus and it's like, oh, there it is. You know, so you have to give yourself, you have to be vulnerable. And that's the thing. If you're nervous, it's hard to do that. If you're tired, it's hard to do that. If you're thinking about distractions got you, and you're thinking about other things, it's hard. You have to live in that moment, and nothing else is important except what you're doing right then and there. It's like, I have to give everything, and I have to try to feel, what is Kim feeling? What is Peter Fredette feeling? What is Kevin Adamson feeling? What are all these guys that I'm performing with on stage? What are they feeling? And I have to mold and fit in with that. And when they feel me close to them, it's easier for them to feel what I'm feeling.
Right. Better connection.
But at the same time, I've learned through the years, there's a term, and I thought I was the only guy that ever said this term, was plowing. And I always teach my students, you got to learn how to plow. And when you plow with people, it's kind of like you ignore what they're doing, and it's like you're a metronome, and you're a freight train, and you got to plow straight down the track. So even if people aren't feeling it today, and they're not grooving in a deep pocket, they're not sucking you in, and you keep yourself strong. Problem with that is, if you only plow, you're not giving any groove and moving with the rest of the guys. Sure. So as you play with the better musicians that you play with, you have to learn how to plow when you need to, and you have to learn to always be elastic and bend with it. And it's kind of like, imagine the train going down the track, but there's rubber bands on that track that allow the track to sway back and forth, but there's so much forward momentum that you will never break the elastic band. It'll never sway too far.
It's interesting. Go ahead, finish your thought.
If you feel it swaying too far and you feel like it's going to break, that's when the plow mechanism jumps in. And you ride it through that until it kind of meets itself again, where everyone meets, and you got to learn to let it go again. So you're in this zen thing where you're constantly, you're trying to be relaxed, but you're aware.
Right.
Right? Yeah. You don't want to let it go. If you just let it go and you go off of instinct, you might stray too far. And so anyway, after a few gigs, I remember after the gig was finished, Kim goes to everybody, awesome plow, guys.
Wow, eh?
Yeah, I was like, holy shit. I'm like, you just said plow. Wow. You know, like, anyway, Kim feels the same way. And his tempo and his meter and his feel is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It blows my mind sometimes if I have a metronome going, it's like, can you hear my click, Kim? Because it's unbelievable that you're so, it's like he feels exactly where my center point is.
Well, you know, he's been playing the songs for 100 fucking years. So
it's very mind blowing. So it's an honor to play with someone of that magnitude of their playing level. And also, you know, he rather me play without a click. He doesn't want me to be on a click. And sometimes I just use the click and start the song and shut it off. And when I'm on the click, he knows it. He turns around because he can feel when it's too, it doesn't want to bend
enough.
Too
staccato-y, too, right. Yeah, it's there's no, I got it. Yeah.
And I agree. But it also comes down to trust. It comes down to trust and giving. And he is that person. He trusts me, and that gives me more confidence, just like Rick Emmett, that he could handle it a different way, but he chooses to be like, at first, he just let me use the click and get comfortable. And me go, Kim, do you mind if I try it without a click in the rehearsal? He's like, please, you know, like, please do. And, you know, I started finding little by little, like, which songs I could actually, I didn't need it. And some songs I still chose to use it. And, you know, I'm a wild party. It's like a freight train going down the track. 150 beats per minute, I run the click track because it's just a slam, boom, gah, boom, gah.
Sure.
And it caters to that.
It's funny because you mentioned a few minutes ago about, you know, when you're getting on stage and being ready and being in the zone. And I don't know if you remember this, but I remember I had not met you yet. We were beside the stage there, and Kim played what, like 3 or 4 songs acoustically, and you were going to go up and play it by yourself. And I came up to you just to introduce myself, and you said to me, just give me a moment, dude. And when I come back, do you remember this? Yeah. You're like, let me get through the first part. And then, because you guys did 2 parts, right? Like 2 sets. And
exactly.
You said, just give me a minute. And you came off after the first set. You're like, hey, man, how you doing? Like, then we're talking 100 miles an hour. But you're like, at that moment to get out there for the very first time and play, you were so focused and just in a zone.
Yeah.
That was kind of fun. I just wanted to share that story because I thought that was kind of cool.
The way I look at that, you know, again, I think what I actually told you was, you know, Kim is already out there. He's already been out there for a few shows. He's already warmed up with the audience. I felt, especially in that show, if you remember, there was a really awesome vibe going on between them and the crowd.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's a great theater to play too, right? So
yeah, he already had a really big connection going. So he was already, defenses were down. He was super comfortable. They were already vibing. Here's me, stone cold.
Right. Yep.
And Peter for that as well. Here we go out on stage, the rhythm section, and they already started vibing with themselves and finding grooves, and we're coming out ready to rock. And it's like, I got to hit that, and I need to be there for Kim. I need to be there for everybody. It's not just me. It's for everybody. I need to be in that zone. So when I go 3, boom, cat, and it comes in, that everybody feels that power. They feel the confidence, and they feel that they can feel my feel is relaxed enough that they instantly have no choice but to jump into my feel too.
Right. Great, great point.
You're coming, you're giving, and you're not just taking, you're giving and you're taking, and everyone's doing that. But I found that as a drummer, because drums are percussive instruments dictate feel more than other instruments. Percussive instruments dictate tempo more than other instruments. That's why if you just play a cowbell, if you're in my band playing a cowbell, you better be better than Will Ferrell, because you're going to be in trouble. Or playing a tambourine in my band. I'd be like, I ask people sometimes, I know someone listening to this that have played with me and playing tambourine is going to be laughing. I'm like, can you play the tambourine? And they're like, of course. I'm like, no, can you really play the tambourine? Because there's nothing worse than a tambourine slamming out of time or a different feel from my hi-hats.
Oh, sure. Sure.
It's such a dictating tempo mover that people follow it.
Absolutely.
See, people, shakers, tambourines, and cowbells, people just like attracted to them like a magnet. And it's hard to resist that because all they're doing is playing quarter notes and sixteenths. Right. Dook, 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 dook. And it can be deceiving. And if it falls out of the pocket, it's a nightmare.
It's a train wreck, sure.
Yeah, it can be a real train wreck.
What I want to finish on is real quick on drums. You've been a sonar artist for I don't know how long. It's been a while, I would think. And do you still have a signature snare drum?
It was a limited edition thing for their 135th anniversary.
See how I found that in my research? Yeah. I was like, "What the fuck is this?"
Yeah. They. I was very lucky that they asked me to go over to Germany. It wasn't my first time at the factory, but I was asked to go to the factory for Sonar Days, and it was a 2-day event. And the special guest drummers was myself, Benny Greb, and Gavin Harrison. Those were the we were the three main features. And are you familiar with these guys, Benny Greb?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Phenomenal player. Mostly a clinician, solo artist, drummer.
Yeah.
And then Gavin Harrison plays with King Crimson.
Yeah.
And really prog rock player, phenomenal player. We went over and we each gave our own performance in a tent performance center. Plus we each had master classes that we did both days. I think it was 5,000 people in 2 days showed up at this Sonar Days event.
Wow.
It was like way in the middle of like nowhere, Germany countryside. Like it was Bad Ballerberg, Germany. like you're in Bavaria or something. And
so they came up with the snare drum then, though, when you were doing
they presented myself and Gavin with a 135th anniversary snare drum, which was very, very nice.
Do you play it now?
That's the main snare I still use.
Okay.
Yeah, so I have a couple of those. And so what they did was the first SQ2, their custom line drummer in Canada, to use that line. And the drum that I had custom made for that white sparkle drum set, they basically made that drum set, made that same snare drum, and just put my autograph on it with the 135th anniversary and put it out there for a while. And, it was advertised as a Modern Drummer. And,
I think that's where I saw this article. Yeah.
Yeah, Modern Drummer retail for $2,000, and I was like $2,000. If I was just some guy out there, I'd be like, "Who's this Dave Langan asshole?"
I wouldn't
spend $2,000.
So what do you like about Sonar drums? Like what
Oh man, this goes back to when I was first introduced to Sonar drums. Was two things. One of them was at Berkeley, and the other one was from the Buddy Rich Memorial Scholarship Video number 3 with Steve Smith. And he was Steve Smith was playing a Highlight Signature Series. That drum set was godlike. It was unbelievable, the tone and focus that each individual tom has. And you know what? Yes, tuning is a very important thing. If you know how to tune properly, you know how to get each drum in tune with itself, and you know how to separate each note from each drum so that they are actually in a harmony with themselves. And when you get the notes far enough apart in a harmony, you hear clearly and distinctly each note. So I just find Sonar drums, I can achieve the tuning, and everything I hear from other drummers, it always sounds like that. You hear a more focused sound. Then I was at Berkeley. There was another guy in residence on the same floor as myself. I became friends with, and every time I'd go down to the rehearsal room, he'd be in a room, and I hear the drums, and I'd be like, "What the heck?" I finally knocked on the door, and I'm like, "What drums are those?" And he was like, "It's a Sonar Highlight kit." and he had rims mounts on it. So he took the mounting system off and put rims mounts on. And I think that they were medium birch shells. And the same thing. It was unbelievable, the tonal fullness that they had, how clear it was. And then when you played them, the response. So that's another thing. Sometimes when you tune a drum to get the note you want, they feel horrible.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and it's like, wow, this feels terrible. Or a bass drum that feels awful, but the note sounds good. And then when you make it feel the way you want, it sounds terrible. And I find Sonar always has this, I call it the noise sound to tone to tension ratio. You know,
yes.
where there's a good balance where they feel good and they sound good. And they have a very tunable range as well.
You like to play a big drum kit for the most part. I see, when available, I take it like double bass. And
kit?
Yeah.
I never played a double bass drum ever growing up. I always double bass pedal.
Yeah.
And you know, when I was young, going through Neil days, you have all the roto toms and all that stuff. So you get as much stuff behind you, in front of you as you can. But when I got to Berkeley, you know, ended up with two rack toms. And then the most that I would ever bring out to a gig in a large place through all my gigging in Halifax was four toms, single kick drum, one snare. That became my regular setup, but a side snare playing with Nelly. And then, you know, sometimes I go through different sizes, like different things. Through my rock phase, when I said no more hip hop or R&B, I started also doing gigs with Gilby Clark from Guns N' Roses.
Oh yeah, okay.
And doing some stuff with him. So when I would do gigs with him, 24 inch single kick drum, one big rack tom, two big floor toms.
Yeah.
You know, I would change. You know, you cater to your gig as well, right?
That's the LA rock setup, early 90s.
Yeah, exactly.
I think.
Yeah. Two large crash cymbals, two big hi-hats.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Ultimately, I always wanted to play double kick drum and always want all the setup. And in recent times, you know, I've been doing a lot more, having fun, doing that side fun thing, playing Rush songs that you always love to play in a band that plays Rush songs called Permanent Waves. And we're not a clone band or a really like a tribute band. I'm not, you know, we're not up there trying to like put on big fake noses with glasses and ponytails and wearing robes or putting on Neil Peart's beanie and, you know, stuff like this, you know. But, you know, I make my own bass drum logo with my own design of what I thought of when I think of Rush, a man against the masses. I've got an astronaut getting sucked in a black hole, you know. And then all the toms come out. I love playing that. But you know what? Playing with Kim Mitchell, there's a lot of Max Webster songs. And if anyone's familiar with Gary McCracken, he had a large, large drum setup with lots of toms. And it's fun when I get to bring out that big kit and play the party with Kim. Yeah. Wow, how fun is that? And, you know, I get to hit all those little toms. And, oh, wow, I got a 6-inch little tom I can barely even hit. You know, it's so small. And that's fun. You know,
and it's more fun if somebody's setting it up for you too, you know.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, there's more voicing, and I realize I really always should have been playing on a double bass drum kit. It's harder. It's way harder. It's much easier to play traditional grip on the smaller tight kit than it is to play match grip on this
massive
kit that's spread out with my crash cymbal. It's so far away. It's like, and drum fills that you're used to playing at a certain speed, you just can't do it anymore.
Right.
It's too far away. But, yeah.
So how do people, if they want to check you out, you have a website, right? DaveLanguth.com, LANGGUTH.com.
Yeah. I kind of not really doing my website anymore. I just kind of let it fizzle away. I find it's like, I just, you know, do Facebook and Instagram now, and
sure,
people can just find me on that kind of stuff if they want to get a hold of me very easily.
You know, you've given us a ton of information. It's so awesome. It is an industry show, so I'm going to edit this into a few different parts. But I mean, this is some really good things, especially for those coming up in the music business, because it's not an easy business. But like you, if you do it well and you do it right and you make the right connections, you know, you can finally get somewhere right in life. So there you go.
So you know what? Just off on that note, I'd like to say in closing, to those people out there that are pushing to get themselves, or people who have, you know, dreams, goals, you know, whatever you want to call them, to be out there. I want to be a pro guy in the pro scene, whatever it is that you think you want to do. The best word of advice I can give, you play with everybody you can. You suck a lot of crap up. You bite your tongue for as long as you can. Don't be picky and choosy. Beggars can't be choosers. When you're trying to get to the next thing, maybe that gig that you don't like that you're playing, it leads to the next one. And maybe that bass player in the band that you're playing in is really awesome. And he wants, you know, so sometimes we play things we don't want to play, or you don't like the music. Just try to find what's good about it. Don't start thinking about all the negative stuff. Keep yourself in the game as long as you can. That's all you can do. And, you know, again, try to, you know, if you have an outlet for original band, by all means do it as well, because, you know, that is where, you know, lots of time your heart is, you know. And I wish looking, you know, high in retrospect, you know, in hindsight, looking back, I wish that I played in a few more original acts. I did play in a bunch over the years, but a little more. I wish I did a little more of that. So, you know, you got to have fun. You got to fulfill yourself, right? Until you get to the point where you can start to make choices and start to, you know, weed through stuff. But anyway,
great advice. Thank you so much for having me. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
This is the Industry 45 podcast show with your host, Shane Christopher Neal. Podcast available at Giant TV Niagara on YouTube.